This is Media Sales Mastery, the podcast for media sales professionals. In each episode, we bring you information, insights, and ideas from some of the industry's top thought leaders. Connect with us to help pick the topic and guide the show.
This is Media Sales Mastery, the podcast for media sales professionals. I'm your host, Jamie Wood. Our topic today, precision prospecting, how to identify and connect with potential advertisers. Now, I've spent a lot of time recently looking into sales best practice from some other industries outside of media. One of the more interesting areas was actually commercial real estate. And some of the top performing agencies in commercial real estate, you know, still spend anywhere from 2 to 6 hours per day prospecting for new business. Now, think about that for a moment. That means they need to fit everything else into the rest of the day, right? 6 hours is a lot of time. But it did make me reflect on media and the way that we typically set about identifying and engaging new prospective advertisers. So I wanted to dive into this one. It's very much in the weeds. It's back to the basics. And our guest today joins us from the UK. It's Matthew Smith. He is the Chief Commercial Officer of Aspermont. Really looking forward to diving into this one. So let's do it now.
The first five.
Matt, welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to be here.
I wanted to first jump in. We were just talking off air. I'm really interested to know about your background in media and particularly your current role at Aspermont.
Yeah, sure. I'm the Chief Commercial Officer at Aspermont. We're a specialist information provider for the natural resources sector. So we have a variety of brands which support the mining, energy, agriculture sector, from print, digital, through to events. And I started my career, and my career has predominantly been business-to-business media. I did probably around 20 years in the technology sector, working from the traditional sales management into leadership roles. That also included 2 acquisitions. My core experiences, you know, moving from, you know, what was print to digital to data, events, etc. My primary experience has predominantly been around the commercialization of data. So starting with lead generation, account-based marketing, intent, data signals and models. And was fortunate in my last role to launch a global data business, which was gave me a really good opportunity into the international and global markets in terms of the different cultural drivers around data marketing. And then I joined Aspermont around 6 years ago, primarily to look at ways that we can grow and diversify our services revenue line. And that was the traditional journey which a lot of business-to-business publishers find themselves in relation to the migration from print to digital and print to more of a data-driven marketing model.
You know, today's all about precision prospecting, which is obviously critical to business growth, is finding and attracting the right type of partners. In your view, what are the, you know, the attitudes, the habits, the behaviors, the skills that actually underpin, you know, a great media sales prospector?
That's a great question. And I think it's something that's always changing. And also, as we go through this podcast, I think some of the sort of challenges that modern sales leadership are facing is around the adaptability of what a great prospector and sales professional is. And I think what it really comes down to is someone who's a fantastic researcher. I think that's a really important trait of anyone who's in sales now. The ability to think on their feet, more importantly, to have curiosity and passion for the markets that they work in. And that means the ability to read, to research and understand the sectors that they're working with, whether that's consumer, broadcast, business to business. I think it applies to all sectors and areas. But also, you know, that can-do attitude and the ability to think smartly and to ask fantastic questions. I think open questioning technique, investigating what a client's needs and requirements are critical.
Well, let's dive into the main part.
Media Sales Mastery.
Before we start thinking about prospecting, we need to do our market research. You know, as you said, great prospectors are great researchers. I definitely share that view. you know, building out an ideal customer profile or a hit list, what does that process kind of look like, you know, broadly? What does that market research customer profile look like? And importantly, Matt, like, what is that balance look like between actually doing that versus just kind of getting on with it and doing the activity?
Yeah, I see that there are three key pillars to this. I think the first one is understanding and religiously researching the sector you're working in. The second is research the actual client you are reaching out to. And the third one is building a strong value proposition on why they should speak to you. And I think there's behavior that sales leaders will see within their teams where there can be a focus on spray and pray. You know, let's get the volume of reach out. But it really does come to quality and personalization now. I think linking market information with prospects will deliver and really help you build your outreach approach and value. I think you really need to understand not only what the prospect does in terms of the services and solutions, but also really deep diving into the news flow over the past 18 months, whether that's positive or negative. You have to understand what are the drivers within the business, what are the drivers within the brand, and articulate your conversation and your outreach based around that. Also, buying teams are also really complex. You need to understand not only about the individual that you're reaching out to, but also how decision making for marketing is comprised. Rarely is there going to be any decision maker. I think we work in markets now where people are working with influencers, recommenders, whether that's procurement, whether that's finance, whether it's certainly with sales and with other marketing and field sales colleagues. So understanding the decision-making process and how the buying team is comprised is important. And I think also getting a deeper understanding of those roles actually do sometimes conflict, particularly between sales and marketing within organizations. And that shows you that sales as a function is actually becoming increasingly more influential and demanding on marketing. And you know, making requests and demands in some instances about what they want, what they need, what's going to help them in terms of increasing sales and new business opportunities. And then further along, looking at product leaders and industry leaders is also crucial. They're very, very influential. They have a very good understanding of the direction that they want the product and service to go to. But they also have their own individual KPIs as well. If you're looking at, you know, if you're working for an international organization, and I think some of your listeners may have businesses which are local, but also businesses which potentially have global customers, it's important to take into account that when you're prospecting globally, you need to look regionally and you need to look locally as well. Budgets can be decentralized. And if you dig deep, you start to really identify the key stakeholders, you will uncover separate budgets. And don't underestimate the role of partner marketing. I think that's a really important area that in a lot of industry sectors, there will be funding being driven by large organizations to partners. And sometimes that budget can be quite significant. So understanding who your client is, but also how their buying team is structured, who are the key stakeholders, how they work together, and also, if possible, what their individual KPIs are, is really important.
Such a good point, Matt. I think the last stat I saw from Gartner was that the average buying committee, I think it used to be something like 3 stakeholders. Then pre-COVID 2019, it was like 5.4 in terms of individuals who were responsible for making a major purchase decision. I think it's expanded out to something like 7 or 8 now. So whilst I think a lot of media sales professionals came up in the days of an oversimplified view of the world of, you know, get in front of the decision maker, plead your case, who's the economic buyer. But to your great point, I think organizations are becoming a lot more complex. I think a lot of individual people are looking to spread the risk. You know, I use the analogy, no one wants to really have their fingerprints on a major deal. You know, they'd like to have a lot of people have their fingerprints on it. And so to that great point, it's not about just identifying maybe who that prime target is, but also actually having to think about what are the internal politics, what's the structure of the business. To your point, is it Is it a multinational? Is it locally owned? Like, actually having an awareness of not only how good that target might be, but what does it actually take to engage and what would be the cost of extraction of getting revenue out of that client? Major consideration that I don't think we really talk enough about in media sales.
Yeah, absolutely. I think on the point, in my previous role in the technology sector, we did quite a lot of research in the buying process. And you're right, you know, the size of the buying team has changed. It was just increasing each year. There was, you know, from very, very earliest stages of my career, it was around three. It's now grown. I think there's research out there that buying teams have even gone to about 14. And I think they increase significantly beyond that as well. So
wow.
I think a good salesperson really has to spend a lot of time looking at, you know, prospecting. And I think also this is where, you know, sales leaders can look at QBRs as being really important sessions where you can spend time looking at those accounts. You empowering your sales team to talk about, you know, how many contacts or points of contacts have they reached out to, how influential are they, how they link together, and also trying to identify how their KPIs either differ or aligned. The one thing I would take away in the past, probably the past 5 years, is the influence of the sales department with marketing. Quite often now we're having conversations with the sales team as well as the marketing team to make sure that what we're delivering or what we're proposing, or more importantly, what we're trying to understand, is very much driven of what the needs and requirements of that sales team are.
Mm. So I'm jumping around a bit here, but you sort of touched on some really good ways of identifying clients and good fit. Let's say we've identified like our ideal customer profile. Maybe we've even gone to the effort of building out a hit list, and we're now about to enter into, I guess, the prospecting or the initial outreach phase of the prospecting. What are some of the channels that we can use to do our outreach? Just touching on a point you've obviously mentioned before around it's getting harder to actually use the phone as a method of outreach. What are some of the different channels, you know, that you're coaching your teams to use to connect in with these accounts?
Yeah, when you're looking at the channels, I think that I think LinkedIn is the obvious shout out on this one, but it's using it smartly. I'd also probably, you know, we talk about post-COVID, how things have changed. I'd never underestimate the value of the events channel. You know, I don't think a salesperson is going to have any bad experience in terms by attending events. And I think if you work at a specific sector, you know, look at the events, but look at the agenda and the speakers at these trade event shows. They'll typically be the core product expert and will inevitably be involved in marketing decisions or on the go-to-market strategy. So while events now are traditionally probably not seeing so much marketing attendance, the product leads or the industry experts that are speaking on behalf of the prospect that you're trying to reach out to will be incredibly helpful in terms of not only giving you the insight on what the company, the organization are trying to achieve, what are the new services they're offering, but also what they're looking and what their tactical outreach is over the next 12 months. I think building a connection, establishing a rapport, and starting to really capture account intelligence and the decision-making process before connecting with that marketing department is important. And I think the industry lead will inevitably have a need and their own KPIs. You know, you wouldn't be surprised when you're talking to these industry leads and you start to engage them and ask them, look, what are you looking to achieve this year as an organization? And how are you working with your marketing team and how aligned are they? That can really help build a rapport. And I think if you can build that trust, you know, as I said, the empathy with that contact, they'll very soon connect you directly to a point of decision or an influencer that's working within that team. As I said, and I think I've mentioned this a couple of times now, sales are a huge channel. I think if you can see a sales rep at an event, or if you can connect directly with a sales rep, and salespeople want to receive calls and they want to talk, I think we're all in that business. I think if you can sometimes get out of your head that, okay, marketing are marketing, but if you're finding that prospecting is really tough and you can't reach out to that marketing prospect or the marketing function, go to the sales department, find a sales department, and you know, gain the intelligence directly from the coalface on what that sales channel wants. You know, understand their targets. What are their KPIs? What are their needs? What are they demanding from their marketing team? I think it's really important. I think getting them to make an introduction to the key stakeholders is important. But in some respects, if you can understand what they are after, what their KPIs and targets are, and say, well, look, I actually do have a solution or an opportunity to talk about how we could achieve those, salespeople can become a very strong ally. So it's important. I think cold calling versus multiple contact methods is probably a next question that you'll lead into. Subsequently, I think that becomes more complex as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting, actually, because I got a call from an old contact of mine this morning who works for a CRM provider. And obviously her, you know, ideal customer profile is ASX listed companies in Australia. And she's really selling to the chief technology officer. Me being a sales director for many years was interesting. But what she was effectively doing was getting a bit of reconnaissance on a previous employer of mine from the perspective of a stakeholder. And through the course of a 15-minute conversation, I think she was just crafting her pitch to the to the CTO. Really timely you mentioned that, and it made me actually think, Matt, that approach of calling other people who are stakeholders, like salespeople, you'd be surprised how much information you can actually unearth about a company, because it's what effectively salespeople are paid to do, is to A, navigate internal stakeholders, and to B, represent the business and the brand in the market. You know, that event thing's interesting. I kind of was going to ask you a bit about cold calling and maybe even just like a little bit of anxiety or reluctance around prospecting in general. Like I see a lot of people coming into the industry and the idea of cold calling, much to my surprise, like cold calling is almost something that is, you know, a surprise when you see that a rep does it regularly rather than the norm, which is obviously how I came up. That trade show piece, obviously going to networking events, I imagine is much the same, right? Putting yourself out there and having to go to a big room of people. How do you sort of coach people around any sort of anxiety or reluctance to lean into that kind of cold outreach, be by any channel? How do they overcome this? And is there any sort of hack to really kind of reposition or reframe their mindset around that?
Yeah, I think if there was a solution rather than an answer to that, we would be sitting here having the podcast now. We'd have a different business model. But I think what's really important is, I always look with business leaders, if you're a commercial leader, you have to lead from the front. And I think that sometimes I think commercial leaders now are making a transition to being sales enablers. They shouldn't be there purely to monitor, to critique, to, you know, ask for pipeline, to make demands from their sales team, but actually to work in collaboration with them. I think, you know, there will be salespeople that have anxiety, that will have fears. But I think, you know, if you're a business leader, lead from the front, you know, don't ask people to do something that you wouldn't do yourself. You know, always provide constructive feedback and work as their peer and partners. And I think we've mentioned that trade show, attend a trade show with your sales rep. The best training they're going to get is from their leadership team. It's being able to go out to listen, to learn, for you to share with them the type of questioning technique, to also show that, look, yeah, there's a reason why I'm asking you to do this and I'm not afraid to do it myself. And I think that's a really important trait from a business leader. Also, I think always share the value importance of a new business call connection. Shout about it. I think sometimes we do a very good job of shouting about a new deal amplifying across the business if a particular contract has come in. But I would treat, if a new business connection has been made, I think, you know, amplify that across the wider group, show that best practice has been executed here and that a colleague has done a great job in terms of securing a new opportunity or a new discussion point. I think, you know, salespeople like recognition, and I think it's important to share that recognition, to partner with them and to make the process fun. But I think it's important that you present to the wider group why you're doing that. That's the most important thing. You know, what is the reason for this? What are you expecting from it? And making it part of your sales DNA.
I think that's such a great call. The other thing I was going to sort of add to that, which really does lead into the next question, is often there's a little bit of reluctance, I think, because you don't want to go down the path of reading a script on the phone. I know there's a lot of debate around that, of having like a cold call script that you can use versus trying to make it feel natural. But where I found that middle ground is having like a good sort of opener or some really kind of good messaging that the sales team are armed with, so that if they're going into that kind of cold outreach, or if they're meeting a new prospect for the first time, that, you know, they've got a level of confidence and conviction behind what they say. And that can really kind of soften things up to then open up that conversation. In your experience and observationally, you know, are there any openers, or is there any type of messaging or frameworks that you find to be really effective when salespeople deploy them in that initial outreach to a prospect?
Yeah, this is where I fall. No, I think there's a couple of points here. I think if you're doing a traditional cold call, and I think what's a really an observation that I've made is sales team, I think cold calling, I think email has now replaced cold calling. So I think email has become the cold calling of maybe 7-8 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I do think that if you were thinking about, no one wants to take a cold call now, I think you'd be quite surprised, because I don't think many marketeers are actually getting that number of cold calls directly. But I think you have to be direct. I think build empathy. And I think one of the ones that I always try is, look, yeah, I'm not going to, you phone them up and go, hi, I'm going to be direct with you and tell you this is a cold call, and you'll probably want to put the phone down on me. Do you want to hang up now, or do you want to give me 30 seconds to speak to you? It breaks down some of the barriers. It brings some humor into it. And ultimately, I think while it may sound a little bit unprofessional, a little bit informal, it will hopefully make them, hopefully bring some humor into it, and make them feel compelled to speak to you. Also, you don't know how someone is feeling when you call them. They could have had a bad day, a great day. You're gambling in terms of how they're feeling. So trying something which is a little bit different, rather than, this is me, I'm calling from here, I'd like to talk to you about that. Try and actually be honest, open, and see if you can break that down. I also think it's really important to think about the contact. You raised the point about, you know, researching and where you look for in terms of prospects. If you're reaching out to a contact and you've looked at them on LinkedIn and they're new in their role, you really have to build empathy. And I think understanding how long they've been in that role, and also probably accepting it's very unlikely you're going to get a transactional or a traditional sales-led conversation. So asking about them, about their previous experience, you know, what attracted them to this particular industry, but how you can potentially help them, providing, you know, background content or research or editorial access, can really sort of help build that relationship. But I think it's really important to, you know, once you can break down the, get the person to speak to you or agree to speak to you, then you know, keep the questions open and give them at least 70% of the time on the call.
Such a good point you raised there around, I think a lot of salespeople who do like to cold call, one of the triggers that I find that actually makes them reach out to you is if you've changed roles. I know myself, starting in different roles, like usually you'll get this influx of cold calls in like your first couple of weeks. And I've always, to your point, I've always felt that's a bit counterintuitive, because if you've ever onboarded into a new role, A, you don't know the company, you don't really have any political capital yet, you've got no real ability to enact any change until you've at least been in the chair and been able to assess things. But to your point, if it's more around building a bit of a, you know, a connection, establishing rapport, and just setting the intention that at some point in the future, you may become more relevant to them, I think that's a phenomenal insight there. Going to jump into listener questions now, Matt.
I can't ask my sales manager that.
Hey Jamie, my sales manager wants me to contact a big list of lapsed advertisers. Given these clients chose to stop working with us, I don't expect I'm going to have too much success in even getting a meeting. Any scripts or suggestions for how to set up these calls before I start dialing?
That's an interesting one, Matt. What's your sort of initial perspective reflecting on that question?
First, to take into account, the point raised here is that these clients have lapsed, but they did originally spend with you, so a connection exists. So I think it's actually a fantastic opportunity. You know, I would say that is a warmer than cold prospect opportunity. And my approach to something like that would be, you know, is really research the company in the context that you're planning to reach out to. So spend some time researching what's happened at that company since they last engaged with you. You know, what's the news flow been? Have they gone through an M&A? Has there been a pivot or change in relation to the products or services or solutions that they're selling? And also find an event, conference, or even a blog post where someone within that organization may have contributed or referenced. You know, find out really what they're doing around it. Search engines are a great tool. They're your best friend. And I think you can spend a lot of time using search engines and LinkedIn to find out what's happening within that company and who are the individuals that are more active in terms of promoting the services. When you do reach out to them, and don't raise the point that they stop working with you. I think that happens quite a lot, where you used to work with us, or hey, you did some activity with us 3 years ago, but you stopped. I think what that does is it raises doubt and would be used as an objection. And people get changing roles all the time. Don't go back to the past if the past is potentially not good. Address it if it is raised. But you know, try not to create an objection when your first outreach, but make it a positive connection. And keep your questions open. Focus on how they market, what channels they use. Start as if it is a new client that you're connecting with. But start to get an understanding if some of your assumptions from your research are correct, and really start to build an understanding. And then ask the question, if it's the sector you're working in, do you do any activity to this sector, and what is the reason that you no longer do that? Apply it from a position as if you're talking about your entire market rather than your brands. But don't treat the prospect as a lapsed client, but you know, as a solid prospect. It's a great opportunity. They may have had a poor experience, but that stakeholder may have changed. And you try and go in with a positive approach that actually this is someone who has engaged with this sector. So there must be some interest, and it's trying to understand or identify what that is and whether that still exists.
Fantastic advice. The other thing that I thought was really interesting in that perspective, which you're right, is such a good reframe, is these are pretty targeted prospects. The fact they've actually transacted with your business, you would argue that the relevance is already there in a big way. Look, Matt, we're at the end. Before you go, though, I'd love you to just tell us a bit more about the year ahead, and what are some of the initiatives you're driving at Aspermont?
Yeah, pleasure. No, thank you. I really enjoyed it. Aspermont, we've had a very busy year. We've got several events which we have got that will be running this year in London, Perth. We have a launch event in Singapore. We've recently just launched Nexus, which is our dedicated marketing service agency, which basically helps partners or customers with their content creation, giving them access to our topic experts and amplifying that content across our first-party data channels. Our data conversations is a big focus. We've launched our intent data service Scout. So a lot of the guys doing a really good job in terms of talking about our data-led capabilities. Going outside of sales, our content team are making significant strides in data publishing, and our subscriptions team are starting to utilize a lot of that data intelligence generated on our own platform, SkyWave, to grow new reader revenue. So there's a lot happening. I think everyone is having, regardless of industry, quite a few tough market conditions. But we think that there's opportunity out there. We feel that the sector that we're working in is particularly exciting. And all the people, our staff, which is the most important part of Aspermont, are doing an incredible job across all areas of the business. So this exciting year ahead of us. We've got a lot happening. We're always innovating, and we're always launching new initiatives, just to stay ahead of what we think is going to be a really important phase of the commodity super cycle.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us today. It was great to talk to you, and I wish you the very best.
Thank you. Pleasure.